Hello, and thank you for downloading Witness from the BBC World Service. In January 1914, Britain unilaterally created the modern state of Nigeria by uniting two British protectorates in West Africa, one in the Muslim north of Nigeria, one in the mainly Christian south. Using the BBC archive, Alex Last looks back at a defining moment in Nigerian history.
Many people like myself, who belong to an earlier generation of Nigerians, cannot help feeling somewhat overwhelmed by the prodigious changes which our country has undergone in just a little over half a century.
The voice of Ernest Ekoli, the late Nigerian nationalist and journalist, who was born in 1893.
We should not forget that the Nigeria we see on the map today as one country was not always so. It was not a country, but a mere geographical expression.
When Ernest Ekoli was a child, Nigeria was being shaped by British imperial ambition. It had already led to the creation of a colony at Lagos and a British protectorate declared over much of what is now southern Nigeria. Then in 1900, a veteran of Britain's colonial wars, Sir Frederick Lugard, was sent to Nigeria to extend British control northwards to the Muslim Emirates, which made up the vast Sokoto Caliphate, one of the largest pre-colonial African empires. In 1943, just a few years before his death, Lord Lugard himself was recorded in a rare interview with the BBC.
Mr. Joseph Chamberlain, when colonial secretary, decided that the British government should cancel the Niger Company's charter and assume direct control. I was appointed to this task as governor of northern Nigeria on January 1st, 1900.
The basic issue was that Britain did not want France to get hold of this territory and wanted to make sure it had it for itself.
John Smith is a former Nigerian colonial officer and writer.
Lugard, who was a soldier, essentially, and a child of empire, was born in India, after all. He was given the mission to actually try and subdue the north and make them subject to Britain as a protectorate.
I found that the greater part of the country was under Muslim rulers, who annually raided the pagan tribes for slaves, with armies of horsemen, said to number several thousands. I sent a letter to the Sultan of Sokoto, courteously worded, but insisting that this slave trade raiding must cease. He replied curtly that between us there was only war. I had at my disposal a small native force, which I had been instructed to raise in order to check French aggression. For at that time our relations with the French were very strained. The Muslims were defeated and the raiding was stopped.
A protectorate was declared over what is now northern Nigeria. But even under British colonial rule, north and south remained separate entities. With little infrastructure or transport, the two were worlds apart, as Ernest Ekoli remembered.
There were no railways, no roads, no motor cars, and of course no aeroplanes. To go from Lagos to Kano was like going to the end of the world. Perhaps many of you have heard of the story of the prosperous Lagos merchant who, in 1903, imported a motor car, but had to ship it back to England because there were no roads on which to run it. The well-to-do rode on bicycles, and the grandees went about in go-karts or rickshaws. In other parts of the country, people traveled about on foot along bush paths or in dugout canoes where there were rivers. British officials and other people of rank rode on hammocks. A district commissioner, making a tour of his district on his hammock, followed by a long line of men carrying boxes of food and household articles, including a tent perhaps, were a familiar sight on the countryside. In the northern region, horses were used instead of hammocks or other devices.
In the northern protectorate, there was also a huge difference in administration. When Lugard had defeated the northern emirates, he had a problem. He had very few men to impose British control, and Britain was not going to supply more. By this stage, London wanted empire on the cheap. So Lugard adopted an idea from British India and promoted the policy of indirect rule, using the existing traditional leaders to govern under British control. The structured political world of northern Nigeria's old emirates seemed to fit the bill.
had a population of 7 million in an area of nearly 300,000 square miles, and the total British military and civil establishment in 1908 was 399. The only practical way you could run the country was through the existing institutions. It worked very well initially in the far north, and Lugard was excited about it, and it became the creed.
But some of the tribes are governed by autocratic rulers, aren't they? Isn't there a danger, Lord Lugard, that relying on government support, they may abuse their power and tyrannize over their subjects who have no elected representation in a popular assembly?
Yes, that is a real danger. The parent state should for a time reserve the power to remove a ruler. Meantime, in dealing with advanced communities in Africa, such as the Muslim states in Nigeria, the advisor must keep a watchful eye on any such tendency to autocratic rule. He can do this through the district officers, who are in close touch with the villages.
I, as a young district officer going around, for example, was always accompanied by a representative of the emir, a nice old gentleman, usually old enough to be my grandfather, who I was meant to do everything through. I spoke to the district head, or the village meeting through him, rather than directly. That was the theory. In practice, of course, it wasn't quite like that.
How was it?
Well, he was often an old gentleman who would frequently fall asleep.
But while promoting indirect rule in the north, the British government in London had, almost from the outset, considered uniting the northern and southern protectorates into one state.
The process of unification was completed with Sir Frederick Lugard on January 1st, 1914. The country, for the first time, became United Nigeria.
For Lugard, it was a challenge that he wanted to achieve. I think from the British government's point of view, I suspect that defiance of the French and making sure that a larger, bigger Nigeria would be able to stand out against Francophone Africa was one of the major considerations.
As a consequence of unification, transport was dramatically improved. Rail lines brought crops from the north to the south. Workers and traders from different ethnicities began to move and settle in parts of the country which had previously been off limits. But there was opposition too, not least in the southeast, where the British created chiefs where there had been none, so they could extend their policy of indirect rule through local leaders. But despite the unification, British colonial officials continued to rule the constituent parts as virtual separate territories. They barely even spoke to each other, as one colonial officer's wife recalled when she described her voyage on the ship out to Nigeria.
The officials going to northern Nigeria and those going to southern Nigeria looked upon each other with equal contempt, I think. We never spoke to each other. We always took it for granted that all southern officials were rather fat, rather flabby, that they started drinking at 6 o'clock, while we never started before 6:30. In the north, we rode on horses. In the south, it is said that some officials were carried in hammocks.
But the internal separation had serious consequences. The south remained exposed to Christianity and took to Western education, while the north remained independently Islamic. 100 years on from unification, the fault lines still remain. But Nigeria has stayed together, and now the country's sheer scale, its population of 150 million, has made Nigeria one of the most important nations in Africa.
The country which we all now proudly look up to as our common fatherland is a grand mosaic whose parts have been brought together bit by bit, and I hope will be preserved intact in the years that follow independence.
Ernest Ikoli, ending that edition of Witness by Alex Last. For a complete range of downloads and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.